You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. Well, as you've already likely heard, the Academy Awards Oscar nominations were announced this morning. And in some ways, I think that the story here is the fact that you have likely already heard. It started as a private brunch in 1929. It became Hollywood's biggest night over the years. And now it seems like it's an entire season. There's fall and then winter and then Oscars and then spring, right? So it's become quite an event that's larger than one day. So we're going to talk about it a little bit today. Snub surprises, etc. With me in the studio to go over some of this is Joyce Kolhawick. She is an arts and entertainment critic. She's the top of the poll of the Boston Theater Critics Association. She's been covering this stuff for years. Joyce, thanks for being with me in the studio.
Hey, Edgar B. Happy to be here.
All right. We're happy to have you. And joining me from the great state of Maine in a studio up there is Mr. Garen Daly, film critic and friend of the show. Hey, Garen.
Hey, Edgar. How you doing? Hi, Joyce.
Hey, Garen.
All right, everybody here. So before we get into the actual nominations, the people, the places, the things, I want to talk a little bit about what this is and how it works so people can kind of understand that. I mean, I think a lot of people have heard about who some of the nominations are, et cetera. Joyce, can you give us a sense, how does a movie go from being in the box office to getting nominated for an award?
Oh, well, that's a whole other question.
Is it?
I mean, there's usually a big campaign. You know, it goes to the box office, it does well or it doesn't. The studio takes an interest. They think it might have legs, and then they start a campaign. They, you know, they trot these actors out on all the talk shows.
Yeah.
There are billboards. There are, you know, there are cocktail parties. And there's a certain amount of campaigning that goes on, and the studio puts a certain amount of money into that.
How many people are voting,
on these? Here's how that works. I can tell you very specifically. That's a very defined process.
Nice. Okay.
The nomination process involves mailing ballots to all the Academy's active members. Those get mailed out in late December. And then they are due back to Price Waterhouse, who tabulates these things, in January.
Okay.
So all the ballots get mailed out, but only the branches who vote. Branches vote for specific nominees in their respective categories.
When you say branches.
Branches. So, for in other words, actors nominate actors. Film editors nominate film editors.
Directors nominate directors.
Etc. But all voting members are eligible to select the best picture nominee. So everybody votes.
So you get your category and then best picture category.
Exactly. And then all of those get sent back in, they get tabulated, and they are announced this morning.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So that's
it
demystifies
simple.
It a little bit for
it
me.
It demystifies it and also makes it pretty fair in a sense. I think you want actors nominating actors and editors nominating editors. So you have people who are skilled in these disciplines voting for their peers.
Yeah. Garen Daly, do you like this process?
Yes and no. I mean, the big issue always is that, you know, they never really pick films that are quality. I mean, not always.
Did you say they never pick films that are quality?
That was me being a little on the over the top side. But you know, you take a look at a lot of the films. The films are chosen because of their time. You take Lincoln, for example. Lincoln's got a lot of nominations, but Lincoln is really about our time right now. When you look at Lincoln, there are mistakes in it. It's not the best film out there, but in my estimation, it's probably going to win because it fits our time really, really well. But the other thing to look at when you're talking about the voters, this is a very old voting block. It takes a long time for people to get into the Academy of Arts and Sciences.
It's so called an academy. It even sounds old, right? The Academy.
Well, this, Garen is right. I mean, the knock on the Academy is that it's an old voting body.
Yeah. Garen, how do you get into the Academy?
Well, you have to be nominated. That's the first thing. You have someone in the guild has to nominate you. Then you go through a vetting process, and then you're voted in. So you don't have a lot of young people. You have a lot of old people in there. And when I say old, they're usually 60, and they're male, and they're white.
Very
so that skews things a bit. All of that is changing, wouldn't you say, Garen?
It's changing a little bit, but it still hasn't changed enough to really impact what I would say.
Actually, I think it's impacted this year's nominations.
Let's get into that. This year's nominations a little bit. Now, of course, there are all kinds of categories. All these nominations came out, everything costume design to film editing to documentary short subject. But for the purposes of this conversation, let's go to what we kind of think of as the major categories. So that's best picture, that's best director, actor, actress, supporting actor, supporting actress. Those tend to be the ones that people talk most about, maybe screenwriting as well. But let's talk about just from an acting standpoint, actor, actress, supporting actor, supporting actress. So let me start with you, Joyce. Things here that were surprising, people that maybe have been snubbed, people that, of course, got a nomination that we expected to get a nomination.
There's something lopsided about the nominations in the supporting category and the acting, the main acting category.
So when you say acting, you're talking about actors?
I'm talking about male actors. I mean all actors.
Actors in both and categories. Actresses.
Right. So the supporting actor category, for example, is jam-packed with phenomenally talented people who've all won Oscars before. Christoph Waltz, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Robert De Niro, Alan Arkin, Tommy Lee Jones. I have no qualms about any of those people. They did extraordinary work in their films. Best actor, Daniel Day-Lewis for Lincoln. He
no
will
surprise
win.
There.
No surprise there.
Karen,
Denzel
you think he's
Washington.
Win?
Yeah,
yes.
I think he is.
Yeah. Actually, it's his to lose. That's really what it gets down to.
Let's hear a little of Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln in the film Lincoln.
Things which are equal to the same thing are equal to each other. That's a rule of mathematical reasoning. It's true because it works, has done, and always will do. In his book, Euclid says this is self-evident. You see, there it is. Even in that 2,000-year-old book of mechanical law, it is a self-evident truth that things which are equal to the same thing are equal to each other.
There he is doing Lincoln. Now, I think for a lot of people who study Lincoln, who are real Lincoln fans, of which there are, and when I say Lincoln, I mean Lincoln, the historical figure, Abraham Lincoln, they know certain things about the man, including the fact that he maybe didn't have the booming voice of a president that, you know, like a cartoon version of a Lincoln might give it. This is something you heard Daniel Day-Lewis really capturing. He did a lot of historical research. Should he win? You both seem to think he will win. Should he win this category? Garen?
Yes. It is a great performance.
Yeah.
I mean, when you watch the movie, you believe him to be Lincoln, and he carries himself not only just with his voice, but just the way that he carries himself with the weight of all that is going on in his presidency. He does a remarkable job. It is what any actor should look at as a template on how to act.
Joyce, you agree?
Completely, utterly. I think there's no one who's going to beat Daniel Day-Lewis, and I think all the actors there know that. This is incontrovertible to me.
One thing I got to say that really impressed me about him in this movie, and this is, again, something that I think that that he captured, that you hear about Lincoln historically, if you read about him, if you understand him, is how funny he could be amidst all of the, amidst all of the pressure that was going on, amidst, you know, all of the things that were happening. He could be really funny, and he's hysterical at times in this
Doris
movie.
Yeah, Doris Kearns Goodwin's book on which this is based makes a point of that, and Spielberg makes a lot of that in the film, and it punctuates this film nicely. But I'd love to talk about who was left out of this category.
Who was out?
John Hawkes, who was in The Sessions, who played the victim of polio who lives most of his life in an iron lung, who decides he wants to have sex for the first time and institutes these sessions with his sex surrogate, played by Helen Hunt, who should also have been nominated for Best Actress, and instead the studio put her up for Best Supporting Actress.
Who decides that? The studio decides that to lobby for her to be supporting rather than...
The studio will position its players the way they think they stand the best chance of winning, and I think they grossly miscalculated here. And I would have left Bradley Cooper out of this category for Best Actor. He's a fine actor. I didn't think what he did in Silver Linings Playbook was particularly demanding.
Garen, let's hear a little bit of Bradley Cooper right now in Silver Linings Playbook, and then, Garen, I want to get your take on actors that maybe shouldn't be there.
Dad, be nice. Come on, she's making crabby snacks and homemades. Come on, Dad!
What are you so up about?
You're very happy.
I'm happy.
No, you're so up.
Isn't that a good thing?
No, you're just up. I don't know what that is. Are you taking the proper dosage of your medication?
Am I taking the right dose? Of course I am.
Okay. Taking a little bit too many or something? Or...
No, if I was taking that, I'd be on the floor, Dad.
So Bradley Cooper, probably best known for his role in The Hangover. Can't fault him as an actor. He's trying to get into more serious roles here. What's your take on him, Garen, and on other actors that maybe shouldn't have been there, should be there?
Well, my take on Bradley Cooper is he's a person that in Hollywood is being viewed as someone with a lot of respect right now. He's been doing some great comedies, The Hangover being one of them. He's now in Silver Linings Playbook, which is really just starting to to get out there. They've done a very nice job, Weinstein Company, of platforming this film so it builds up momentum towards the Oscars. So I actually think he is deserving of the Oscar nomination. Mm. I don't think he's deserving of the actual award itself, because he's still up and coming. I'm also a little curious that, you know, Joaquin Phoenix got on the nomination, mainly because I still think that there's a little residual going on about this, I'm Still Here, his faux documentary. And I think that people started getting a little tired of that.
His shenanigans.
I thought it was going to be some blowback, but it was a good performance, and there's a lot of buzz in the business side of things that the Weinstein Company has done not a good enough job with The Master. Mm. I mean, they brought it out too early. They've gotten a couple of nominations, but not as many as they wanted
to.
Well,
it's a highly cryptic film.
It
very
is impenetrable.
Difficult to decipher.
It's very good, though. Yeah. I mean, for me, I think that if not Daniel Day-Lewis, this is my personal opinion, mm-hmm. that Joaquin Phoenix, to me, was the performance of the year, aside from I thought Joaquin
Better
Phoenix.
Better than Denzel Washington? I
just think Joaquin Phoenix seemed like he was on another planet in that movie. And one of my friends said, and I think this was a great thing, either that man is legitimately insane, or that is one of the best acting performances I've ever seen
in
my life.
And I think you've struck on
And maybe
exactly,
he is legitimately insane, though.
No, this is my objection to the performance. I think it's out of control. I do think it's shapeless. And
do you
I,
really?
Yes, I do. And I think Denzel Washington did a much better job in Flight, so he would be my choice after that. Although I think, Joaquin certainly deserves that nomination. I think that's lovely. It's the best actress category that's really bugging me.
Why so?
What is Jennifer Lawrence doing in Silver Linings Playbook there? What is Naomi Watts doing there for The Impossible? She spent most of that film wet and moaning, and it wasn't even a sex film. The Impossible, it's about that tsunami that comes in and blows everyone away. I mean, they did what was required, but it isn't a performance that's subtle or deeply shaded or particularly interesting, even. Jennifer Lawrence, cute, lively, and funny.
Hunger Games.
But she's nominated for Silver Linings Playbook. To me, Emmanuel Riva in Amour, the 80-something-year-old actress from Alain René's film from a long time ago, Hiroshima Mon Amour, she should win. I hope she does win. That is clearly the most accomplished performance in that group.
Garen, Amour is a film that takes a lot of people by surprise here, I think. What do you know about it?
Well, I just want to bounce off of something that Joyce just
Go
said.
Ahead.
I think that this is one of the weakest categories in some years.
Huh.
And it's interesting that Hitchcock with Helen Mirren was originally supposed to go in the fall, in the spring of 2013. They moved it into the fall of 2012 because they thought that Helen Mirren would have a much better shot of getting an Oscar nomination for Best Actress because it was such a weak category. But going back to Amour, I think there's a lot of reasons why Emmanuel Riva is going to be the winner of this category. And one of them is it's a great performance. She has the history behind it. But also, I think that there's going to be an emotional response from this older voting bloc in the Academy, whereby they say, you know what, we've experienced this with our parents. We've seen this where we have to deal with this kind of human tragedy. And she embodies it so well that they're going to have emotional response and they're going to vote her because they're feeling that themselves. It's going to be an emotional vote.
And, of course, the big fact that's coming out is that not only the oldest female ever nominated for actress, but also the youngest in Beasts of the Southern Wild with that young actress from that. Okay, guys, we're running short on time, so I want to move on to films. Best Picture, Best Director. Best Director, Best Picture. Joyce, you are fired up about the Best Director.
Oh, my gosh. I nearly collapsed this morning when I didn't hear Ben Affleck or Kathryn Bigelow's names being mentioned as Best Director nominees.
Ben Affleck, of course, for Argo. Kathryn Bigelow with
Zero Dark Thirty.
Both very politically charged movies.
Politically charged films.
Both nominated for Best Picture.
Both nominated for Best Picture, thank goodness. But we're talking about historical thrillers that were demanding, that were morally complex, that demanded great things visually and logistically from their directors, both of which were supremely well executed. How are they not there when David O. Russell is there for Silver Linings Playbook? Whoever his agent is needs a bonus. This is a miracle that he was nominated instead of those two.
A legitimate miracle.
Yes.
Garen, do you agree?
I think what we do is back off a little bit and say, why was Kathryn Bigelow not nominated? Mm-hmm. And the reason she was not nominated is because of this blowback from a whispering campaign that is going on. It's not really loud, but you do hear about it, where everyone is talking about, oh, that film, the one where they condone waterboarding mm-hmm. and torture.
Okay.
And I think that's going on with Kathryn Bigelow. With Ben Affleck, he's not really a great director, although I think Argo is a great directorial job because he took what is basically a very linear story and is we already know what the ending is and created a lot of tension. My view of Ben Affleck right now is that he is a really good craftsman and he's getting better. And I think the next film that he does that is really, really well done, he will start getting that kind of recognition. I think that the directors are saying he's a little too new at this. I think it's really interesting, also, that Tom Hooper was not, for Les Miserables, put up mm-hmm. as a best director. And I think that says a lot. But if you're looking at the best director...
See, I disagree. Tom Hooper, I thought that was terrible. Les Mis. I thought that yeah. I think he had two moves. He used them up, and the film was tedious and suffered as a result.
Anybody surprised that Quentin Tarantino? Quentin Tarantino, well, not for
I was
director.
Surprised. I thought Django Unchained was a marvelously well-directed
surprise,
film.
Surprise,
Garen? Yeah, a little bit surprised. But I just want to go back to that Tom Hooper. What yep. I was going to point out was Tom Hooper is up for the Directors Guild Best Director. Mm-hmm. And invariably, what happens at the Directors Guild happens in the Oscars. So whoever wins the Directors Guild Award is going to win the Oscar Award. It's something like 15 out of the last 16 times.
Okay.
So it was a surprise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
So it was a surprise that he wasn't on there. Yeah.
Right.
All right, guys. We got about 2 minutes left. I'm talking with Joyce Cole-Haywick, who is an arts and entertainment critic, and Garen Daly, film critic. We're going over some of the Oscar nominations. Let's get on to Best Picture before we get out of here. There are 9 nominations. It's interesting you were talking about whispering campaigns against these directors and stuff like that, and yet Zero Dark Thirty is nominated, as is Django Unchained. So maybe there's a little bit of this sense of, well, we can't nominate everything, we'll just throw them a Best Picture.
Well, we have to remember that, again, this is a more commodious category. Yep. You can have up to 10 nominations here, and there are 9. All the other categories just have 5 nominees. So yep. they can, you know, they can spread their wings a little bit. They could have also nominated The Sessions again in this category. I think it was a very underappreciated film.
So that's
which
your
was
biggest
beautiful.
Snub film, like as a film as a whole, would be
no,
for
my
you,
biggest
Sessions?
Snubs really have to do with that best director,
that best director
category,
really got you,
category
yeah.
and also the best actress
Joyce,
category.
For you, who wins Best Picture, who should win Best Picture, and who will?
Well, I think Lincoln will win Best Picture, and it's a toss-up for me between Zero Dark Thirty and Lincoln, quite frankly. Or Amour. I have to think about that a little
right,
bit more.
That's fine.
But
we
I think Lincoln will win.
All right, Garen, who should win? Who will win?
Well, I think one of the things that's most really interesting to point out is that this is going to the nominees are going to drive what is going to happen on the Oscar telecast because 8 of these are going to do over $100 million. So people are invested in watching the Oscars because they've already seen the film.
Yep.
That's one of the reasons why they expanded it. I think Lincoln is going to win because I think it's a film for our time. My favorite film of that list, though, is Life of Pi. I really enjoyed it. I was totally I didn't realize what I was getting into. I thought I was getting into a kid's story. I got into something that was much more layered, much more textured, and very, very well done.
Yeah,
although
seems
Zero Dark Thirty is very good, too.
11 nominations for Life of Pi. So.
And there's a film that's nowhere on any of these lists.
Go.
Anna Karenina. I thought it was ravishing and brilliantly done, well-directed by Joe Wright.
All right.
It's nowhere.
There you have it from Joyce Cole-Haywick, arts and entertainment critic, and, of course, Garen Daly, film critic with us here. If you want to tell us what Oscar picks you think should win, check us out on Facebook, and that is at facebook.com/Boston Public Radio. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. Joyce, thank you.
Thank you.
Garen, thank you.
My pleasure as always.
Callie Crossley, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Edgar. Thanks for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. You can find us on the web at wgbhnews.org/BPR. I'm Callie Crossley. Have a great afternoon.